Good morning, everyone. The Senate E-12 Budget Division will come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. It's 8:33 a.m. We have two items before us, Senate File 724 and Senate File 593. We'll take Senate File 593 first, recognizing testifiers have traveled from Barnum, and we appreciate that. I'd like to welcome Senator Anthony Laurie to the committee. Good morning.
Anthony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
We have Senate File 593.
I have Senate File 593 for you to consider here. I don't know if handouts got in members' packets. I do have a couple of handouts. Really, this was a bill brought to me by Barnum School District, and I have a few of the folks here to help the members understand it. But really, the issue behind this is, and it goes back a ways. Barnum has been a real leader and made a real commitment to early childhood programming for a very long time. In fact, Christy Wickstrom worked with me and my little munchkins 20 years ago when we were doing early childhood work. And the community has really had a phenomenal dedication to early childhood programming. What they've run into most recently is some of the early childhood programs have all of the early childhood programming has a requirement for parent participation. And in a rural setting like ours, with parents working two jobs oftentimes and different hours, you can't find the slot where you can actually get all of the kids that you're trying to target to get these programs to. And so they've had a hard time actually using the early childhood allotment that they've been given. But what has been phenomenal, and I actually went and met with this class. I talked with some of the parents and the educators. They work very well with the school readiness funding, and they instituted a program for kids in the year before kindergarten. They're calling it Begindergarten, and they do a half-day program. I think they run an AM and a PM version, and it doesn't require the parents, but they have phenomenal participation, and it really helps these young learners get ready for kindergarten. But they're doing this largely on their own dime. The school readiness funds aren't sufficient to cover this programming. And so what we're looking for is the ability for Barnum School District to use some of the reserves left in the early childhood programming in order to cover some of the costs for the school readiness programming that they have to run this Begindergarten program. And with more information, I have, I don't know who wants to go first, Superintendent Dave Bottom.
Welcome, Superintendent. We'd like to acknowledge we have receipt of the materials and some great pictures here.
There's a YouTube video, too, Mr. Chair.
We thought that was a nice touch.
It was. Okay, welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for holding off the snow for a little bit, too. That's exactly right. What we would like to do is we understand that the community ed program, they would like to see more money in school readiness. Our tact was not to go there, but just to say we have money. If we could use the money that we have that's in our fund balance for ECFE, that would help us considerably. If down the road there is money to be put into school readiness, that would certainly help as well, but we wanted to take the route that this is a no-cost issue, but it would certainly help us financially. We've put money in from the general fund to help support this. Due to our parents, due to the economy, working two jobs, working shift work, our ECFE programs, parents are not able to participate as much as they want due to transportation issues. And so what we find is that we don't have as good a commitment from the community and ECFE program from the parents, but as soon as they get to that school readiness area, that's where we really see the kids start to come. And we want to continue that, and we want to support that, but it would sure be nice to be able to use that money and be able to have that flexibility within those two funds.
Thank you, Superintendent.
My name is Christy Wickstrom, and I am Barnum's Community Education Director. And I would like to point out on the information sheet that I sent you, we do have the students served, and as you can see, we have it broken down into ECFE and school readiness participation. And so you can see the number of students that we're serving as well. And we always offer two or three classes per session, and we don't make any adjustments until right before the session starts, and that's when our coordinator, Lori Cockett, she determines what's best for the families who have registered for those classes as well. Something that's very unique to Barnum is all of our early childhood teachers have four-year degrees. One of them also has her special ed, and all of our early childhood teachers have their parent education license. So we take parent education as a priority in our program, and all of the interaction that my staff has with parents does indicate that that is a priority in our program as well. So with that, the parents, the Begin to Garden, that's a full class as well. We do have a sliding fee schedule so that we can help make that affordable for parents. We currently have 5 students receiving the Early Childhood Scholarship, and that helps our program. That helps with funding of our program, and the sliding fee schedule has helped immensely as well. So does anyone have any questions for me regarding any of this information?
Questions? Senator Lori said that he was active 20 years ago in the program.
Yes.
And,
yeah, in fact,
successful experience?
I was his parent educator.
Ooh.
Yes,
tell us
I
more.
Was.
It was a great experience, and it was the early childhood component.
Yes.
I mean, we're big proponents of the early childhood, but, you know, the flexibility has just been tough to manage with this, the developments that we've had.
And, so, Chairman, I had Tony's kids were in my classroom. I was their school readiness teacher. And then I was, Tony and his wife came to ECFB, and I was the parent educator in those classes.
Well, that's great. You can share that 20 years later, so we appreciate that.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. They'll have a grandparents awareness program, too, I hope.
A which?
Perhaps there will be grandparent awareness.
You know, they should get married first.
yes, excuse me. Yes. Okay. I agree. Okay, well, we'll continue and reserve the right to ask further questions here. Okay. Further testimony?
Was there additional testimony? I think that concludes the testimony. We would stand for questions and appreciate member support.
Okay. Members, questions, Senator Pratt.
Not so much a question, Mr. Chair, just a comment. Senator Lori, I support your bill. I certainly like the fact that we're allowing our local communities to make the financial decisions that make sense for them, and so. I'll plan on voting in favor of this to move it along.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 593? If not, it looks like we have very good bipartisan support on that appeal for flexibility. What we do, Senator Lori, we'll lay it over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair,
Thank
and
you.
Members.
And testifiers, when we reconvene in about 20 minutes as policy committee, we'll hear further about your program. Thank you. We have next Senator Claussen, Senate File 724, School District Optional Revenue Increase. And Senator Claussen, I invite you to have your testifiers accompany you. And I believe we have several handouts. If there's anything additional to share, please make that known as well. Welcome, everyone. I believe you're familiar, but state your name for the tape as you testify. Senator Claussen, Senate File 724.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Senator Wieger and committee members. And thank you for the opportunity to introduce Senate File 724, a proposal to increase the local optional revenue levy formula by recognizing differences in educational costs due to geographic location in the state of Minnesota. Equity is a basic goal for developing state education financing formulas. Geographic location is one of the factors to be considered in the equity formula. In 2014, the legislature changed school board levy authority by extending to school districts the authority to implement a local tax assessment. This effort was intended to bridge some of the financial gaps for districts that either have a difficult time securing voter approval or have limited authority because of equalization issues with districts that have greater referendum levy authority. Senate File 724 proposes a $26 per pupil unit increase in the local optional revenue formula. And for school districts included in the Minneapolis-St. Paul-Bloomington Metropolitan Statistical Area, the increase is $76 per pupil unit due to increased cost factors associated with geographic differences. In December 2014, University of Minnesota researchers published a report entitled Locating Equity, Implications of a Location Equity Index for Minnesota School Finance. The study examined the equalization of different costs of educating students associated with various regions of the state. And you do have a copy of the executive summary in your packet here this morning. Minnesota has large differences in the cost of living based on different regions of the state. As an example, the Minnesota Office of the Legislative Auditor in 2000 indicated the Twin City metropolitan area was 18% more expensive than the rest of the state. A similar study in 2006 reaffirmed the earlier 2000 study. There are also regional wage differences. A 2014 study found a 27% point difference between the highest and lowest wage regions of the state. I'd like to review just a few of the key findings of the university study. There is a 25% point difference in wages between the highest and lowest cost communities in 2014. This results in a 41% difference in costs faced by school districts between the highest and lowest wage school districts. This impacts the level of services available to the classroom. The study identified 14 counties facing higher than average costs: Anoka, Carver, Chisago, Dakota, Dodge, Hennepin, Isanti, Olmsted, Ramsey, Scott, Sherburne, Wabasha, Washington, and Wright. School districts in these counties had average educational costs ranging from 4.3%, which is Dodge, Olmsted, and Wabasha counties, to 5.6%, which are the 11 remaining counties, above the state average. The study identifies 8 counties where school districts face higher than average costs in 2014: Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Olmsted, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington. Olmsted and Washington have a 5% increase to a 12% increase that's found in Hennepin, higher than the state average. There are 47 school districts that have lower purchasing power for each dollar received because of higher labor costs. These costs range from 4 to 6% above the state average. The 2014 legislature was a big win for rural metro equity and funding, but did not take into account geographic differences in the cost of doing education business. Senate File 724 brings equalization into focus by taking into account geographic cost drivers and purchasing power. And with us today offering testimony, we have Scott Kroonquist from the Associated Metropolitan School Districts, Patricia Magnuson, Executive Director of Finance and Operations with the Osseo Area School District, and Rebecca Gagnon, School Board Member, Minneapolis Public Schools.
Thank you, Senator Claussen, and testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and thank you for the opportunity to offer a few comments, and also want to thank Senator Claussen for bringing this bill forward for your consideration. As Senator Claussen explained, this is really an extension of a recommendation that came out of the Education Finance Working Group in 2012. You may recall that was a group appointed by Commissioner Caselius, was represented by virtually all of the major education organizations in the state, parents, superintendents, school board members, business managers from rural Minnesota, suburban and urban school districts. And the way the program began was, as you may recall, in 2013, location equity revenue was established, and really was established by rolling part of a school district's operating referendum over to a new location equity levy. And the recommendation had been to do that at a level of $424 per pupil for districts in the seven-county metro area and $212 for the larger regional centers in greater Minnesota. And that was adopted in the 2013 tax bill. In 2014, the legislature made a decision to extend the 424 level to all school districts. And so what we have now is a funding stream that's available to all school districts at the 424 per pupil. And this was a great step in trying to reduce the reliance on the operating referendum. The metro school districts in particular are heavily reliant on the operating referendum. Some of them have up to 20% or even more of their operating budget is tied to a revenue that they receive from the operating referendum. So this legislation, Mr. Chairman and members, would actually take the next step then and have local optional revenue address those regional cost differences that Senator Clausen identified. And really they're tied to the cost of labor differential. Senator Clausen noted the cost of labor can be as difference in the cost of labor can be as high as 41% between the lowest and highest cost communities in the state of Minnesota. And as you all know, I believe, the cost of labor is what really drives school district budgets. 75% to 80% of a school district budget is tied up in personnel and salaries and benefits. So this obviously explains why we have such a high reliance in the metropolitan area on the operating referendum, because the current formula does not recognize this cost differential. So I will leave it at that, Mr. Chairman and members, and turn it over to Ms. Magnuson.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate File 724. My name is Patricia Magnuson. I'm the Executive Director of Finance and Operations at Osseo Area Schools. As district officials, as you know, it's our duty to get results for kids, and that is done with the funding that you entrust to us. And we are happy to do that, willing to do that, and we do it really well. And we thank you for holding us accountable for achieving results with the funding we get. Adequate funding that is tied to local needs is an important tool that allows us to focus on students and get those results. Since its inception in 2013, local optional revenue has been an important funding source for school districts. It immediately made sense to us out in the school communities in two important ways. First, in its original form, local optional revenue recognized the significant cost differential resulting from the geographic location of school districts. This recognition of the cost differential for metro area districts was long overdue. It had been a topic of discussion among our districts for many, many years. The comparable wage index that was referenced in the U of M research that you have the executive summary on alone indicates that a 25 percentage point difference in the wages between the highest and lowest cost communities in fiscal 2014. In the districts in which I have served, I've seen up to 90% of the budget be consumed by wages. It's an important part of our budgets. Another important component, besides recognizing cost differential, is that the local optional revenue entrusts local school boards with the authority to opt into the funding to meet the local needs that their constituents have elected them to do. The impact of their decisions are explained to voters during required public meetings, like all the other important decisions that school boards make. This local control is important for all Minnesota school districts. Unfortunately, as you know, school funding is never able to adequately provide the resources necessary to meet the needs of each student, and that's our job. Operating referendum, as Scott Kroonquist alluded to, is one tool that local school districts have to increase available funding to address the significant cost differentials that help us to meet student needs. As you know, operating referenda require the approval of voters to be put into place or renewed. For Osseo Area Schools, the operating referendum represents 15% of our general fund budget, and that is a large portion of our funding, and it's tied to voter approval. So as a result, voter education is vitally important for the year or more prior to an election. We'd like to think that our voters pay attention to school funding and know what our needs are all the time, but unfortunately we get their attention when we put something on the ballot, so voter education is very important. Prior to starting my work in Osseo Area Schools about a year ago, I spent 20 years in a similar role in Eden Prairie Schools, and I worked with superintendents and school boards through five local initiatives to pass a referendum in that community. The voter-approved referendums, as you may know, consume the energy of administrators and school boards, and we're also trying to be held accountable for achieving results for our kids. They also consume principals, classroom teachers, and other support staff, because these are the ones that see parents every day, and so they're naturally going to be the ones that answer their questions. So we have to spend a lot of time not only training our community, but training our staff members. And every minute that we pull a staff member out of their classroom or consume a staff meeting talking about the key points of an operating referendum so that they can educate is a minute we're not talking about students and student achievement. School funding is complex. It takes years in the trenches to understand it in a meaningful way. I've been in it for 20 years, and I still have a lot to learn. And our communities are smart, and they want to know what we're talking about, and we respect them. So we're going to put all kinds of efforts into those voter education efforts before a referendum. It's never going to be enough time for them. It's impossible to give the time necessary to respectfully educate our community and simultaneously keep our eyes focused on student achievement and the needs of our classrooms. Local optional revenue is really important. It's a very important revenue source that provides local control, vital funding, and has the potential in the form in Senate File 724 to recognize the important local needs for metro area districts, that geographic cost differential. I urge you to continue to hold school districts accountable for the results we get for students and for explaining the decisions we make at our local community. And the funding in Senate File 724 allows for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gagnon.
Thank you. My name is Rebecca Gagnon. I am a school board member in Minneapolis Public Schools in my fifth year on the board, and I am also finance chair and treasurer of the board. These numbers are near and dear to my heart, so I appreciate the time, Chair and Senators, to testify today. So a lot was covered about the importance of the referendum. We are up for a renewal in 2016 of our own, and it cost us about $500,000 to pass the last one, and that's not including all the costs of volunteers and teachers, educators, folks out there on the ground knocking on doors. And it was passed overwhelmingly by the city of Minneapolis because they do support public education in Minneapolis and know the value of that. But it, as was said, our referendum makes up currently about 15% of our budget. It's been about 24% in the past. That's a significant amount, around $107 million, to actually do the work of the district. So, in my past memory, levies were meant for kind of bells and whistles. I moved here from Austin, Texas. We built a beautiful stadium with an operating referendum of our school district. That is not what we do with ours. We buy down class size, we pay for English learner services, we buy technology. So we do some pretty kind of basic things that are incredibly important to our students with our referendum dollars. Yeah. So as was said, in Minneapolis Public Schools, we have a diverse group of students. We have diverse group of needs. And that means that we spend our money very differentiated, and some schools require significantly more funding than others. We have a school that generates around $5,000 per student in their budget allocation, and another school that generates around $12,000 per student in their budget allocation. But that allows us to do things like have very small class sizes, have co-teaching models, and that is shown in the past couple years to dramatically move achievement in grade levels of those high priority schools. So it's incredibly important at the end of the day, though, since the school board is charged by the state to manage funds and support our schools, that we have the ability to do that without going to our taxpayers to ask them. And, with the support of our taxpayers has been great, but it also, our property taxes in Minneapolis have skyrocketed the last few years. We have a lot of a growing number of residents on fixed incomes. We have folks whose wages haven't kept up with inflation. So it is very difficult, and we recognize that. And that is one reason I do believe going out for doing the public education work around our budget and referendum is very important. And it's also important that we have adequate funding to support all of our schools. And adequate funding, by definition, by this body, is college career ready. So that is quite the high mark, and we are up to meeting it, and we work very hard every day to meet that. I would say our funding makes it difficult. So I would really appreciate consideration of this change, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. And I do have a handout.
Okay. That'll be distributed. Thank you, Ms. Gagnon.
Yes,
questions of the testifiers? And as noted, this recommendation dates back to a task force that the Department of Education assembled, and so we've seen it before. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite sure where to start. It'd be interesting to have a little more history of the bigger picture over time, because I think if we heard the kind of the longer historical perspective, we'd find that certain property wealthy districts had enormous capacity to raise revenues for their districts, for their schools. And to the extent that the legislature actually put a cap on the ability of those districts, because otherwise they'd just be spending way more than other districts. And in fact, many of those districts are still quite high spenders. The question that's going through my mind is kind of what comes first, the chicken or the egg? The more you spend, the higher your index goes, the more you need to have additional revenue. Well, a number of years ago, we heard districts like Osseo come in and complain that Minnetonka and Wayzata were taking all the good teachers from their schools, and they had no ability to basically counteract that because their revenues were much less. And so I think the role of the legislature needs to be how do we treat districts fairly, and how do we give some comparable opportunities to students across the state? As you're asking for more revenues or ability to raise revenues, there are many districts in the state that just don't have the revenues to address the teacher performance evaluations, or a way to fund their maintenance on their facilities. And so I think it's a tough sell to change the formula. Not only here, but I think in the tax committee it would be a tough sell too. But I mean, I am kind of lost, because it's in terms of how do we fairly structure formulas that give all districts basically some kind of a fair approach to providing education. You know, I mean, I have tiny districts. I have, they're all rural districts, but most of them do not receive revenues for what was called Q-Comp, or performance funding, and none of them receive any special treatment in terms of maintenance on revenues or maintenance on facilities. So that, I guess I'd leave it at that. It's not really a question. So,
yes, Mr. Grunquist.
Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, just a quick response. I mean, we certainly agree that the formulas are complicated, And it is your job to try to arrive at overall formulas to address the needs of each and every district and student in Minnesota. And actually, the researchers say that we generally do a fairly good job of that in Minnesota in terms of the different funding streams. We recognize the geographic remoteness through the sparsity formula. We have a transportation sparsity formula that recognizes the high transportation cost in rural areas. We'd recognize the needs of poor students through compensatory, our English language learners through an EL funding stream. And then the one major one that is missing, though, and this goes back to, I mean, every task force that's looked at this for the last two decades has agreed that the big one that's missing is we do not recognize the significant labor cost differential. And so, in effect, what the state policy says is that it tells metro districts, you need to go out and pass a referendum to address that cost, because we're not going to do it at the state level. So that really explains the higher referendums. If you actually do a look, side-by-side look, of the districts with the highest referendums and then compare that to the highest revenue school districts, they're not the same. In fact, many of our high referendum districts are down in the middle of the pack in overall funding levels. So, and we think actually now the change to local optional revenue provides a smoother transition for the state to now recognize this, because now you're going to be recognizing it through a local levy. It's an equalized levy, but local property taxpayers now in those metro communities are going to have to actually shoulder the greatest burden in paying for it. So we think we've moved a long way over the years, and we think the new local optional revenue provides really a nice option for the legislature to finally recognize this cost differential.
Well, and if I could just, Ms. Gagnon. Senator Weger. You know, there's also a differential in students served and the concentration of differential needs that our students have. So anywhere between 3,000 and 6,000 of our students are homeless and highly mobile every single day. We have a $51 million cross-subsidy for special ed, which is $1,400 off the top of our general per-pupil formula for every single student. We have an $8 million cross-subsidy for our English learners, which is $232 off the top of our per-pupil for every single student. So some of those things also kind of have different pulls on Minneapolis Public Schools and other metro school districts than some of the other districts do. So we're balancing some of those costs also.
Senator Jensen, and on deck, Senator Dames and Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I don't really have a question either. I think the members of the committee are aware of my feeling on local optional revenue after looking at changing it last year to local optional revenue. What I'm most concerned about is what happened with the disparity percentages in our districts at 30-some percent, over 30-some percent. And after hearing Commissioner Casilius and some of the information that's come out, that we're now down to 18%, and that local optional revenue had something to do with that because of the equalization factor within the formula. Rural districts are, outside of the metro area, dealing with a lot of diversity, a lot of English language learning issues, more so than they ever have before. So some of those kinds of conversations I disagree with. That there's, you know, a higher burden in one and the other, maybe the number, but you still have to have the teachers and the resources and the availability to do that no matter how many of those students you have in your district. For example, Faribault School, this is the first year that they were able to hire, because of local optional revenue, a coordinator for their English language teachers. They've never had one before. The teachers were doing that on their own. So some of these kinds of struggles that happen in these districts that weren't able to pass levies, that's what this is about. If you're able to pass a levy and you're able to do it over and over, you're able to use that money for whatever it is that you think in the district needs to happen, no matter what, where you're located or what size you are. If you're not able to, because of tax structure or property wealth, your teachers get less pay. They just do, because otherwise you'd have to shut down programs. So to say that labor is the main thing concerns me too, because if you're able to raise levies and you can give the teachers the raises and they're getting more money, we can't even get them in rural. We have elementary positions that we can't even get one application for. So I understand that you're looking to figure out what to do, but I think we've done a pretty good job of trying to figure out how to get some more equalization into these formulas, and this proposal would actually bring the number the wrong direction by allowing more money to different districts than others, which is what local optional revenue was meant to stop.
Okay, your position's clear.
Okay.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Gagnon. If you could, in the handout here on the third page, it talks about property taxes. And I was just curious if you could tell me what, if you take the referendum voter-approved levy plus the school board voter-approved levies, or not voter-approved, the school board-approved levies, if you could tell me on a $150,000 home, what would be the total property tax for education in your district?
Okay, so if we raise, so it's 107, if we raised, last year we raised it by 3.5%, that was about a $150,000 home, that was about $60 a year. Oh, the top of my head. My lobbyist does not know.
Okay. Sorry, James, we'll ask staff to get
that. If you could get that information, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to lead up to my question here in just a minute. Part of my concern with this is exactly what Senator Jensen brought up, that we debated this issue a couple of years ago, only to hear that once we put in local option revenue to recognize cost differences between the metro and rural districts, that it was unfair if you were a non-metro or non-regional center. And I think the effect has been that we've just seen an inflation in that amount. The real cause of this, the root cause, is the fact that after the state modified the property tax, I think it was Senator Stumpf, you can probably correct me, I think it was 2002 under Senator Governor Ventura, that we failed to keep up with the per pupil funding, which has forced more and more districts to go out for these operating levies. And not a shameless plug, but I think why we've had a great discussion about doing 3% on the formula going forward. But I'm confused a little bit, either Ms. Gagnon or Mr. Kronquist, on the purpose of this, because in one sense I hear it's to address cost differences between regions, but I'm also now hearing that this is a way to address cross-subsidy. And I guess, what is the real purpose of this bill? That would be my question. So I got to it in a long fashion.
Who'd ever like to? Mr. Kronquist?
I'll start off and then turn it to Ms. Gagnon. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pratt, the purpose is to recognize the cost differential. I think other issues come up, like the cross-subsidy, because the reliance on the referendum is so high, and part of it is because of the cross-subsidy. Part of it's because the formula hasn't kept up with inflation. But certainly a significant part of it is because we don't recognize the higher cost of labor. So all of those really come to bear. Interestingly, the special education cross-subsidy is another strong evidence, actually, of the cost differential. All right, we have significantly higher cross-subsidies in the metropolitan area. The reason is because special education is based on reimbursing salaries and benefits. We have higher salaries and benefits in the metro area. Thus, we have higher special education cross-subsidies in the metropolitan area.
Thank you. And I was merely bringing up some other points when the senator was talking about the different costs and why our budget has not kept up with the needs of the district.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I recognize this definition in this bill here. And while it is very nice to see that, I would concur with folks here that it would be preferable to make this equal statewide. And I don't really know that these conversations about it costs more here or there, you will find that when you go throughout rural Minnesota, some of these expenses that are out there, things have merged greatly into a much more homogeneous situation. And so one of the problems is that because the rural areas don't have some of the funding that they need, it's hard for them to be competitive with what you offer. This only has those issues. So in this particular area, especially in this particular area, the local optional revenue, I think the benefit to us all has been the recognition of that. And so I just don't really agree with what you're saying about how things are so different, because I think the world has changed in that regard.
Okay. Your point of view is noted. Senator Klassen, some concluding remarks before we lay it over.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that, you know, it's been pointed out that education is a marketplace just like any other. And there are higher costs associated, as we've seen in studies conducted by the University of Minnesota, in certain areas of our state. And what this proposal attempts to do is to equalize that for districts that are having, due to their geographic location and supply and demand and marketplace demand, are needing to equalize that through additional revenue. So, and it is a local control decision. So, again, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to meet today.
Thank you, Senator Klassen. And to the testifiers, Senate File 724 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The E-12 budget division is adjourned. And we'll change the tape members and we'll convene as the policy committee. And Senator Lord